So yesterday we were discussing the four different approaches that we found in Rishonim to explain the same phenomenon. Everybody is subscribing to the same halacha, that Hargu and Aragim, and the Edim Zomen are successful in getting the person killed, so then they get off, and they're not punished in Beis and Shamata. Beis Shamata will deal with them, but Beis and Shamata, they're free. And the question is, where does that come from? What is the source of that din? The reason why the source is so important for us is because we're really learning the sugya, not so much of Hargu and Aragim. The sugi that we're really learning about Bavakama is whether Shulmu Mashalman or not. If Edom Zomim are successful in getting a person to pay money, then we turn around and say, Kasha Zomim to them, or do we say it's over? The same way that if they kill somebody, it's over, and they're not punished, so too if they make somebody pay money, it's over, and they're not punished. So we're not sure whether we should extrapolate from Misa to Mamon. So the only way to understand that, to know whether we should do that, is to understand, well, where did it come from in Misa in the first place? So we developed over this year, yesterday, and the previous year, there are four different approaches in the Rishon and what the reason for this din is. One is the simplest pshat that appears in the Mishnah itself, La'achiv, if the brother's around, then and only then Edom Zomim applies. If the brother's not around, Edom Zomim doesn't apply. Then we had the reason that appears in the Gemara a little bit in the Braisa, of Eino Shemin Adin. Since the Torah just talks about Kasha Zomim, and Kasha Zomim has a certain connotation to it, namely trying but not succeeding, even though logic dictates that Kavachayim should have brought it up to the next level, that also should be for sure Chayev, sorry, Eino Shemin Adin. We don't meet out a punishment based on a Kavachayim. The third approach was the approach of the Ritva, that whether or not you accept the rule of Eino Shemin Adin, this for sure, in Edom Zomim, everybody agrees you don't use logic, because Edom Zomim defies logic. It's a chiddush, and the Ritva makes reference to the Gemara in Maseches Bava Kama that talks about the possibility of Edom Zomim being a chiddush, and therefore in Chiddushim, there's no logic in Chiddushim. What it says, what it doesn't say, it doesn't say. And then we had Rashi's, which was the most famous, even though it was the one that was the least mentioned in the Gemara, the most famous drasha of Kasha Zom Lo Kasha Osa. There's somehow an official formal drasha of Tashem HaPeh teaching us Kasha Zom Lo Kasha Osa. So let's see if we could walk ourselves through these four reasons and see how they would apply to Bamanas. So we'll take the first one as the easiest one. La'achiv, the Torah says that the only time a Zomim applies is if the brother who you testified against is still alive. So if it's a case of Dinei Nefashos, if the Edom succeeded, then by definition he's not alive anymore, and then it's not called the Yachiv. In a case of Dinei Mamonos, he's alive and well. He lost a few dollars out of his pocket, but he's still there. So we could say with complete conviction, the Asisam Lokesh Zomim Lasos the Yachiv, we will punish the Edom Zomim to what they tried to do, and even succeeded to do, to their brother. Because the only thing that matters, according to the first interpretation, is the brother alive or not? If the brother's here, Edom Zomim kicks in. So with Dinei Mamonos, no matter how much money you paid, the person is still alive. So according to the first reason, so it seems like it's a no-brainer that Mamonos and Nefashos part ways. What about according to the second reason? If you go down the route of Ein Onshim and Adin, so this opens up for us a question that we spoke about a lot earlier on in the year, namely, what is our take on Onshim and Adin when the onish involved is not an onish aguf? The onish involved is an onish mamon. Are we mechayev mamon min adin or not? Do we say kein yesh onish min adin by mamonis? Do we say no? Ein onish min adin, beim mamonis, beim nefashos. So if you remember, that was a shayla we spoke about back in that days. Tosus really raised that question. The simple reading of the first Mishnah of Bava Kama is that in Dinei Mamonos, we can jump from one to another. Kavachayim is Mematzinos, we can use logic. In Dinei Mamonos, the Mishnah speaks about learning Afshor from Bor and Eish from Shein, etc. All the different potential limudim that appear in Davdeis and Bava Kama point in the direction that by Dinei Mamonos, all bets are open. Dinei Mamonos, Onshin and Adin. The only lone source that seemed to indicate otherwise was a Mechilta. Tosus quotes a very, very ambiguous Mechilta, where the Mechilta said, why does the Torah say, ki yiftach ishbor, ki yichu ishbor? We just read it last week. Why does the Torah say a person opens up a pre-existing bor, or he digs a bor? Either one of those cases is chayev. He asks the Mechilta, im ala psicha chayev, ala kriyelo kol shegein. If the Torah holds you accountable for opening up a pre-existing bor, I could have argued, I didn't dig the hole. I just simply removed the manhole cover. I didn't really dig the hole. The Torah slaps you and says, nope, bala boy shalem. How much more so you go with a bulldozer when you dig a hole in the middle of the street? Of course you're going to be chayev. So why does the Torah write ki yichre? Says the Mechilta, because ein onshim adin. Because if not for the fact that the Torah spelled it out, parachu b'chaktan, and said ki yiftach yichre, you could not have used the logic, because you cannot use logic to make somebody pay money. So the simple reading of that Mechilta is that Ein Oshim Adin applies equally to Mammon as well as to the Fashos. So Tosus had a lot of trouble with that Mechilta. Tosus said, you know, father Mechilta, other Yishar had different Pshatim in Mechilta, others said Mechilta never really meant, but a lot of things that we spoke about way back in the base. But when all the dust settled, the Pashas Advarim is that when it comes to Mammonus, it's Cain, Oshim Adin. That Mechilta is really the lone dissenting voice, and we're not even sure that it descends. We're not even sure that's what the Mechilta meant. So, according to the simple pshat in the halacha is, when it comes to mammon, it's very much onshin mammon min adin. If that is the case, that yes, onshin mammon min adin, so then when it comes to dinim mammonis, we should say, well, the Torah speaks about kasher zomim, true. Kasher zomim means that he attempted. The Torah doesn't speak about succeeding, but logic dictates. Madoch, if zomim is chayav, kal v'chomer osa is chayav, by nefashos, the kavach omer fall short because they don't shin min adin. But by mominus, where there is no such limitation, so we should fall back on logic, fall back on kavach omer and Cain, hargu in an erogin, but shumu very much is mishaman. So far, according to the first two sources, it seems pretty clear that mominus and nefashos are going to part ways in terms of this shadow. What about according to the third approach? What if you're going down the route of the Ritva that don't use logic in chidushim? Once you're in an area of Allah called the Chiddush, I don't want to talk to you, says the Ritva. So then, l'chora, the Mammonus is also a Chiddush. The fact that you believe the second set of Edom over the first set of Edom is a tremendous Chiddush. It's a Chiddush, Beim Benefashos, Beim Malkus, Beim Mammonus. So in any area where Edom Zobin is a Chiddush, Chiddush automatically closes the door on Kavachomers. So then, l'chora, it should close the door on the Kavachomer here also. It should tell us that just as Hargu Edom Haragin, so to Shilmu Edom Mishaman. So now we have 2-1 now. Now we read the three sources. Two of the sources are pointing in one direction. One is pointing in the other direction. We need the Yavo Kosov RV. We're going to end up with a 3-1. We're going to end up with a tie. We have to go into overtime. So what is the fourth source going to tell us? So the fourth source is the trickiest of all the sources. It's tricky because it doesn't even appear in Chazal. But it's the trickiest of all the sources because the Torah says, Kasher Zomim. And again, according to Rashi's understanding, there's somehow a built-in tradition to the phrase Kasher Zomim. It's like a drusha, like an exclusion. Kasher zomam, v'lo kasher osa. So the question becomes, what is called osa? Killing a person is called osa. It was done, it's not reversible, finished. That's called an asiya, and therefore we can apply the rule of kasher zomam, v'lo kasher osa. What do I make? Is I'm going to pay money? So that gets a little bit tricky. Do you say when Beis Din paskin that Reuven has to pay $100, and Beis Din actually took the $100 away from him? So Beis Din went in there, and they took the $100 out of Reuven's pocket, put it into Shimon's pocket. Has there been an official asiya that has been accomplished? Well, I mean, in one sense of the word, there has been. They did take the money, they did do an action. On the other hand, it's easily reversible. Take the money back and just reverse charges, put it back in the other person's pocket a minute later. So maybe one could argue that in order to be called osa, osa has a certain connotation of irreversibility. That's called osa. You kill a person, short chesamei, sometimes you can do about it. Mammon is easy come, easy go. You put the money right back again where it started. So maybe mammon is fall short in terms of osa. Maybe yeah, maybe no. Not sure what the answer to that question is. So Tosus themselves discuss this very issue. So we take a look at the 8th of the Marmikamos. Tosus begins to tackle the Shaila. What would the din be in terms of Edom Zomim, who succeeded in the realm of Mammonus, and the money was already laid out, and now they are caught? What is the din? Are they called Edom Zomim or not called Edom Zomim? So Tosus quotes in the 8th of the Marmikamos. Pirush Riva. The Afilu Shilem Apia Edom Zomim Chayavin, says the Riva, even if the person, the nidon, the victim, the person who was testified against, already paid based on the Edom Zomim, chayovin, Edom Zomim is still chayav. Why is that? Delo shayach b'mamon kasher zomim lo kasher osa. The Riva is also going down the route of Rashi's drasha. Kasher zomim, the Riva is taking the drasha very seriously. Kasher zomim lo kasher osa. Says the Riva, the drasha is not applicable. Why? Two magic words. The efshe b'chazara, give the money back. It's reversible. And therefore, you can't say with a straight face, we were also ready, sorry, it's too late, and no Edom Zomim. For Rima Farish, the Re says the Riva is 100% right for a totally different reason. For Rima Farish, Dulo Tzarech Lahaitaima, you don't need the Riva's reason. Is the Riva right? Now, I don't know, says the Riva. You don't need his reason. Forget about his reason. Why? Because when it comes to mammon, we can go down the root of kal v'chomer. Because after all, we all know, as we said back in the days, says the remix reference back in the days, that by mammon on shemin adin, we can punish based on a kal v'chomer. I've had the aminim b'makas hargo in that rokim. I but the Mishnah says that when it comes to ritzich, when it comes to the mammonus, I'm sorry, when it comes to the nefashas, you can't punish the eidim if they succeeded. That says the read. That's nothing to do with that topic. That's different because by nefashos, taka the din is that ain't on shemin adin. So when all the dust settles, we have two different approaches of the revon, the re, both coming to the same conclusion, lamaisa, that by din amamunis, we part ways from din nefashos, each one for a different reason. The revon for the reason of that. That's not called awesome because it's reversible. The re for the reason because by Dinei Mamonos we have a right to fall back on own shin min adin. Do we have anybody who disagrees with the Riva and the re? So the only possible sheet that we're able to pin on who may disagree is the Ritva. Now we don't know that for a fact. We know that the Ritva was the one in Makkos who said that the real source for Har Grand Aragam is Chiddush. And it was Mamonos such a Chiddush. If you go down that route, then you would probably equate Mamonos and Nefashos. So we don't have a Ritva, at least in Makkos, we don't have an explicit Ritva that disagrees. But we're guessing, we're sensing there's probably grounds to disagree with this Tosfos. So not only are we guessing there are grounds, but in fact there are grounds. And we happen to luck out of this one that there is a Ritva about this topic, but it's not in Maseches Makkos. It's actually in Maseches Bava Basra, the third parak. And there's a comment of the Ritva, Kasha, the Ritva, and Bava Basra in the third parak that clearly puts the Ritva at odds with this Tosfos. Clearly shows that the Ritva disagrees with the Tosfos, which is not a great surprise because the Ritva Shetoso, who says that the source of the din of Har Grand and Aragin being a Chiddush should carry over, should spill over equally to Dinei Mamonos. What's the context of the Ritva? So we need a little bit of a background as to understand, to appreciate what the Ritva is talking about. And it starts with the Sugya on the 9th of the Makaros. It's a Mishnah in Maseches Bava Basra. The Mishnah speaks about the Sugya of Cheskes Gimel Shanim. It's really we need an introduction to an introduction to understand the Ritva. The problem is by the time all our introductions are ready, maybe time for Shabbos, but we'll try to give a little, try to mekitzer the introductions. The whole third parak of Bava Basra is dedicated to the topic of Cheskes Gimel Shanim. What is Cheskes Gimel Shanim? What's the din in the following case? You have a din Torah that's developing. Two people, they're arguing over a piece of land. I claim I'm the rightful owner of the land, and you claim you are the rightful owner of the land. How would Beis Din even begin to judge such a case? So, L'chora, you have to figure out, well, what happened yesterday? What happened last year? Who's been owning this land? We just walked in the middle of nowhere. Who's been owning this land since as far back as we could remember? So one of the parties has what's called the Cheskes Avos. Namely, Reuven says, listen, I'm telling you, you all know, my father lived on this land, my grandfather lived on this land, my great-grandfather. This has been our family plot for the last 1,000 years, as far back as anyone can remember. So that's, and everybody agrees to that. The Beis Din agrees to that. And guess what? Even the other party agrees to that. Reuben has Cheskes of Osef. So what in the world is Shimon claiming? Very simple claim. He said, it's true that you own this land for the last 100 years, but you sold it to me. He said, I'm claiming that you sold me the land. So the case is over. You sold me the land. So what kind of a claim is that? Is that a valid claim or not? So the Mishnah says, well, not so simple. If he really sold you the land, so then where's your shtar? Where's your document? You should have some proof of that. So the person claims, I don't have that. I lost the document. He sold me the land, and I lost the document. So the question is, where do we go from there? Is that a legitimate claim, not a legitimate claim? So the Mishnah comes up with the following. The Mishnah says, if Shimon has been sitting on this land for the last 3 years, he's had what's called Achilles Peiris, Cheses Gibel Shonim, and nobody's questioning that. We have Edim who can testify that Shimon's been sitting on his land for the last 3 years. So then Shimon gets to keep the land, even without being able to produce the document. If Shimon does not have Cheses Gimel Shanim, then he loses, we throw him off, and then Reuven comes back to his land. That's what the Mishnah, that's the opening Mishnah in Maseches Bava Basra. That if you have 3 years on your side, that's great. If you don't have 3 years on your side, so you're going to lose the land. The question is, where did this come from? Before we can analyze Adam's Omen, where did this thing come from? What is this based on? Sisrei Torah. So it's fascinating that the entire parak, it's a very, very long parak, third parak of Bava Basra, there's a lot of lumdus, but she was going to town on it, she would sit on it for months and months on end, on this din, And the Gemara never, I mean, the Gemara talks about it a little bit, but the Gemara never really gives us the background, the entire background, as to where this is even coming from. Like, how does this fit, this whole model of 3 years, how does this fit into general Dinei Mamonos? This is not the first time we have a sichsuch, it's the first time we have a fight over who owns property. So what is the background? What is going on in this sugya? What are the, almost the ABCs behind, before you open up Cheskes Gimel Shanim, what should the din have been? So the Chorah, the answer to the question is very, very simple. Whenever you have a fight in Dinei Mamonos, who wins? The muchzuk wins. You know, when they say in American law, possession is 9/10 of the law. In halacha, it's 99.99% of the law. That means that if I'm holding on to it, it's mine. Let's say the moshe of the following din Torah. I'm wearing this sweater, and Reuben comes up to me and pays it and says, Rabbi, that sweater is mine. And I say, you're crazy. That's right. No, it's my sweater. And Reuben says, no, that sweater is mine. And we're screaming and yelling at Beis Din. So we go to Beis Din. So Beis Din says, I don't understand. The case is closed before we even discuss it. Rabbi Sablowski is muchzuk on the sweater. So, of course it's a sweater. Unless, I'm motzeh chvei of araya. You want to prove that it's your sweater, bring Adam. Go bring Adam that you sold him, that he sold you the sweater. Go bring Adam that he stole your sweater from you. Close mind that you can't bring Adam, so the muchzuk always wins. So how come that doesn't happen over here? When it comes to Cheskes Gimel Shanim, if Reuben and Shimon are fighting over a piece of land, and Shimon's sitting on the land right now, and Reuben's saying, but you stole my land. Reuben's saying, everybody knows that this is my father's land. Everybody knows this has been our family plot for the last 1,000 years. You stole my land. And Shimon says, no, I didn't. I bought it. So why don't we just say, well, possession is 10/10 of the law. Let Shimon keep the land and finish. What's the Mishnah drawing us a cup with? Gimel Shanim, with Shtaros, with Maiselach. You're sitting on the land, so it's yours. So there is a clear message that Chazal is getting across to us by not applying that principle, that when it comes to Karka, there's no such thing as being Muchsuk on karka in the classic sense of the word. Muchzuk means kol ma shetachas yado shel adam shelo. If something is in my possession, I'm wearing a sweater, I have my wallet in my pocket, I said I'm wearing the glasses, these things belong to me by definition because I'm holding on to them. You don't hold on to karka. There's no such thing as holding on to karka. It doesn't exist. That concept of holding on to karka is a non-entity in halacha. So therefore, the principle of muchzuk is gone. So there's no muchzuk. So what do you do next? So in the absence of muchzuk, what do you do? What's the next step for Beis Din? So the Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Kufa Min Aleph tells us that what would the halacha be if you have a din Torah between two parties about metalkalin, about an animal, but there's no muchzuk. Why is there no muchzuk? Because the animal's sitting in the street. So there's an animal out in the street, the animal out in the field somewhere. It's in an area that doesn't belong to anybody. And Reuven is shrine chavikayim, it's my animal. Shimon shrine chavikayim, it's my animal. I bought it from you. Who wins the din Torah? There is no muchzuk. So the Gemara of Metzia Daf Kufa Min Aleph says, there's something else that we follow. There's something else that's called cheskes marakama. Who used to own the animal? Do we know? If we know who used to own the animal, then we assume if Reuven used to own the animal, even though right now he's not muchzuk on it, out in the fields, and Shimon is not muchzuk on it, Shimon's claiming that he bought the animal yesterday, so you follow cheskes marakama. So in terms of the hierarchy of Psach and Dinei Mamonos, first comes first. First is Muchzuk. If I'm Muchzuk on the sweater, I don't care whether you own the sweater for the last 20 years. If right now I'm Muchzuk on the sweater, it's Metatlin, I win the Din Torah. Muchzuk of Araya. In the absence of Muchzuk, then and only then we fall back on the second principle called Cheskes Marakama. And that's what's going on in the Mishnah in Bava Basra. That when it comes to Karka, we don't have a Muchzuk. Because there's no such thing. You can't physically, halachically be Muchzuk in Karka. But you can have cheskes marakama. So that's exactly what the Mishnah says in Bava Basra, that I claim the field's mine, and Beis Din knows that it's been my family's field for the last 100 years. You claim you bought the field, prove it. Go prove that you bought the field. And if you can prove it, so then I win the field, not because of a muchzuk. I win the field because I have a cheskes marakama. Muchzuk is binyan. You could be sitting on the field. That doesn't make a difference. The one who has the cheskes marakama is the one ultimately who walks away. He's the one who wins the field. So the starting point of the third brach of Bava Basra is, I win the field. It's mine, cheskes marakama. It's mine to keep and finished. Unless you could prove it. How could you prove it? So the best way to prove it is shtar. That would be gewaldig. If you bring a shtar, that would be wonderful. So now it starts to get a little bit tricky. You don't have a shtar. Now what? What other possible proof could you have that you actually bought the field? So that if you had Adim who could testify that they saw the sale of a field, that would also be great. You have nothing. You have no shtar, no Adim, you have nothing. So what do you have? You walk at the basin and say, I've been eating the field. I have Adim The Edom can't say that they saw me sell the field, but the Edom can say that they saw me eating the fruit for the last couple of years. What does that mean? Is that indicative of anything? So that's where it starts to get a little bit tricky. So the Mishnah says yes. The Mishnah says that if you have Edom who could say, they have no idea whether the field was sold or not, but we have Edom who can say, we were there for the last 3 years, and we know for a fact that Shimon's been eating the fruit, that's a proof that Shimon must have bought the field. How is that a proof? So comes the Gemara and says, because Reuven never would have let him get away with this. The fact that Reuven knows about it, Reuven's not out in the Reuven's here. Reuven's sitting here and watching. Every day, he sees Shimon go to the backyard and collect some fruit. For the last 3 years, this has been going on. Shimon's been planting, he's been plowing, he's been harvesting. He's raised a malabas in the field. And Reuven's been sitting here and twiddling his thumb, hasn't made a machol, hasn't said anything, hasn't tried to have done anything. So comes the Gemara, and then the Rishon elaborated upon this and says, that in and of itself is a proof positive that Reuven must have sold the field. What was Shulchan would let somebody for 3 years straight harvest his crops, take his fruit, live in his house, and not open up his mouth? Comes the Ramban and says, guess what? It's a Raya Brura even before 3 years. Even before 3 years, it seems to be a pretty convincing proof. Who would ever, can you imagine, I'm going to leave out a field for a minute, put it into a house. It's my house. And also, I come in one day, and I see a guy's living in my house. A guy's living in my house 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. And I don't call the police. I don't throw him out. I don't make a machor. I don't make a whole protest. So, l'chora, now the guy could say, well, you sold me the house. I leave the house. Every day I come in, I knock on the door, the guy's sleeping on my couch. I say, oh, I'm so sorry to bother you. And I walk out. Every day, he's using the house for 3 years, and I walked out. So isn't that a riot? Isn't that a proof positive? I must have sold the house. So the Ramban says, you don't have to wait 3 years for that to be a proof. So why did Chazal put the magic number 3 years? Says the Ramban, for the first 3 years, we would expect that the person has documentation. People tend to hold on to documents for a couple of years. So for the fact that this supposed lokech doesn't have a shtar, that creates a reis on his claim. That in and of itself undermines his very claim. So you're right, logic dictates that the mere fact that I'm letting somebody sit in my house and not protesting, that's probably a proof that he bought the field legitimately. On the other hand, he doesn't have a document which he should have had. And the fact that he doesn't have a document throws into question the validity of his claim. After 3 years, says the Ramban, who holds on to their old statement? Guys holding on to tax statements from the 1970s. So people throw out the documents already, even the deeds in the house. People throw out things already. After 3 years, sure, no one's been questioning me, I throw it out. So up until 3 years, the absence of the shtar undermines your claim. After 3 years, the absence of the shtar doesn't address your claim. Your claim is still a valid claim. So when all the dust settles, that's the din. The Mishnah says that there's no muksik to go on. Even though one person has cheskes barakama, he has cheskes avosav, we can reckon that, we can deal with that. As long as the other person has a proof that he bought the field, the proof being either shtar, edim, or cheskes gimel shanim, if he has a sufficient, acceptable proof to the contrary, then we will give him that field. That's the din, that's the Mishnah in Bava Basra. That's the background. So now, with that background, the Mishnah in Bava Basra and the Zion, and the Nevav, so the ninth Rambam Kamos, speaks about the following. How do we know that he was there for 3 years? You have to have Edom. The Edom, again, the Edom don't know whether he bought the field, but the Edom know he was there for 3 years. Says the Mishnah of Abbasan and Vav, dying to the Mamakamas. Hayu Shnayim Eden Asosha Achla Shalashanim. What if you have two Edom who come to Beza and they testify about the Chesed Gimel Shanim? They say, we were there. We lived across the street. We saw every single day for the last 3 years. Reuben's been coming into the house. He's been living in the house. He did it 1 day, 2 days. The entire 3 years, they're made that there was a Chesed Gimel Shanim. So what does that mean? Practically speaking, Beza is going to paskin that he gets the field now. Guess what? It turns out that these guys were Zomimim. That's quite an act of Hazama. They say, for the last 3 years, we've been in Bergenfield testifying about this case. And two other guys say, for 3 years? You were with us in China for the last 3 years. You were nowhere near Bergenfield. You went away east for the last 3 years. How could you possibly be made? So they're classic Edom Zomimim. So what happens? Misham and Losakol, they have to reimburse the real true owner of the field. They have to give them the entire field. They have to pay back for what they caused. Because they try to cause a loss of property. So al zenem of a sisablo kashizom lasos liachiv. Said, don't they have to pay now? The kayim the din of kashizom. Comes the tenth of the Ramakamos. it's a Mishnah Melech. I mean, I put it for the Bachurim, and the Mishnah Melech was easier to find from the on the Mishnah Melech to find it in the other sources. So comes the Mishnah Melech and says, Harav Nemucha Yosef, Kosav Beperech Cheskas. The Nemucha Yosef was the parish on the side of the Rif in Baba Basra, one of the Rishonim. On the Mishnah of the Mastis and Hayu Beis Beidim Shachas Techazach, who's Mishamas called? Mishem Haritva. The Nemucha Yosef quotes a question from a Ritva. Make note of who's asking this question, the Ritva. Shehiksha. The Lama Mishalmim. Why in the world do the Edom have to pay? Kevan the Eina Edom Nasim Zomin at Shenigba Dino Sharisham. Obviously, there was a Gemar Din. If there wasn't a Gemar Din, if there wasn't a decision of Bezin, then there's a no-brainer. Then there's no Kasha Zom altogether. That we know for a fact. The Kevan the Nigba Dino Sharamachzik, Vichziku Bekarka Shahai Biado, Havalei Kasha Osav Lo Kasha Zom. Boom. Ask the Ritva. By Dinei Chesed Gemushanim. Map out for me what the sequence of things was. The Edom came, the Bezin listened to the testimony, the Bezin gave a psach. The psach was, this field now belongs to the machzik, to the person who's sitting on the field, the person who's living in the house, he is now the rightful owner of this field. Once Bezin utters those words, the case is done, it's over. There is no money has to change hands. We're not waiting for a check of compensation. That is, it's nigmar din. It's all rolled into one. The nigmar din with the implementation of the din. Once Bezin at Kapaskin that this house belongs to Reuven, Reuven now becomes the owner of the house. In other words, what just took place was, in front of our very eyes, there was a kasha asa that just happened. The din Torah wasn't just Paskin. The din Torah was implemented already with the mere words of, you are now the rightful owner of the house. If that's the case, asks the Ritva, we run into a problem of Kasha Zom of Lo Kasha Asa. How in the world can we punish the Edim? What happened to Kasha Asa? Now again, we're probably scratching our heads and thinking, wait, this is Dina Mominus. What's going on? This is Mominus. So the Ritva continues. He says, the Svirle L'Rav, the Ritva's opinion was, the Gabi Mamona Nami Ba'inan Kasha Zom of Lo Kasha Asa. Even by Mominus, you require Kasha Zom Lo Kasha Asa. So the Ritva poses the whole question on the Sugya of Baba Basra based on a premise that three out of the four Terutzim that we gave wouldn't even buy into the Terutz. But that's the bad news. The good news is the Ritva who's asking the question. The Ritva doesn't surprise us. He's not letting us down. He's asking the question. The Ritva Lishitasa, the Ritva Baba Basra is Lishitasa and Machas. Because the Ritva says the real reason, the underlying reason why Hargoy and Neragin is because of Chiddush. Chiddush Lo Yafinan. It's a Chiddush by Mominus also. Also, we should apply the rule of Kasha Zom Lo Kasha Asa. So Baruch Hashem, we can breathe a sigh of relief. We understand the Ritva's got to give us a little bit of a background, but we understood, we appreciate why it's Dafka the Ritva who is posing this question. Tosfos would never pose this question, but the Ritva poses this question. Now that we pose the question, what's the answer? So Taka's a big pellet. What's going on in the Mishnah? So now we have to wait until next week. We hope we answer on Tuesday. We'll try to figure out what is the answer. It took us 20 minutes to develop the Kasha. Probably take us equal amount of time, not more, to develop what the answer is.